Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
Sound of the bell. It's called the bell of mindfulness for a reason. It takes us out of our local mind, the tyranny of the local mind, into what Eckhart Tolle calls the no mind, the awakened presence, the awareness that is alive within all of us, an awareness that precedes all thought. And so as we allow the breath to become conscious in the context of this awareness, then we are contributing to this planet by abiding in a spaciousness, let's call it peace. And as we become instruments for peace, we literally contagion the world with our peace. Or shall I say the peace, because it doesn't belong to us, but it is always accessible and available. So the Buddha would say, you don't learn from experience in life, you learn from your capacity to experience. So carry that a little deeper. We learn about this peace by our capacity to breathe in and breathe out the very peace that we all share. Thich Nhat Hanh wrote a beautiful little book called Being Peace. And he said, in a world that seems to be at war, could we offer the context of our awareness as a peaceful environment in which others could take refuge? My beloved Adam said that his dog last night was having seizures, and he held the little dog in his arms, and he moved into that beingness of peace, and the little dog aligned himself with that presence, and they were able to sleep through the night in one of the most peaceful nights of sleep. Did he do anything? He offered his peaceful arms to his dog. And so let's feel into what that would feel like to be a peaceful being on this planet. Today is the 16th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. And today we are having Hurricane Ida moving through New Orleans. And yet we get to be a space of peace. As my beloved daughter Terry says, we get to hold the suffering of the planet in our heart. And just like Adam did with his little dog, we get to offer our consciousness of peace. There is one life. That life is God's life. And that life is perfect in every way, amidst the chaos, amidst the confusion, amidst the turmoil on the planet. Our responsibility, our opportunity, and our challenge is to breathe into that peace. So the peace then is emanating from our very doingness, all because the bell of mindfulness took us home. I've been chanting the Heart Sutra ever since I spoke about the other shore. Form is emptiness, emptiness is form. Gate, gate, peragate, perasamgate, bodhi swaha. Gate, gate, gone, gone. Peragate, everything is gone. Perasamgate, gone to the other shore. Bodhi swaha. The Buddha awakens within. The awake awareness opens to this moment, and we are that awake awareness. We are that loving presence. We are that Christed energy. Let that Christ be in you, says St. Paul, that was in him. And so we open to this vibrational energy, this universal Christ, this peace that passes all understanding, this awakened Buddha energy. And we invite the capacity to face the world, not by spinning out in the karma, the cause and effect, but by aligning ourselves on the other shore to a space that was never born, a space that never dies, to an awake awareness that doesn't see good and evil, right and wrong, dark and light, but sees it all as one life, existence itself, and we are existence itself. And so we come here on Sunday mornings to go home to the truth of our being, the simplicity of the breath that is breathing us. Breath meaning spirit, one spirit, alive, awake, flowing effortlessly in every breath. So the bell of mindfulness has brought us home. And now I invite you to place your hands on your heart, feel that connection, that ineffable connection, and journey with me this Sunday morning on this dance with the Beloved. When you realize that all there is the Beloved, all there is the Beloved, then the butterfly that shows up at your window is the Beloved. And the bird that eats the worm is the Beloved. And the squirrels that are running across the branches of the tree and leaping onto the wires is the Beloved. And your neighbor across the street, who you might have a challenge with, is the Beloved. And it's all here so that we can know that there's only one here, and we are that one. When you're ready, I invite you to open your eyes, enter into this space together, seemingly other, but really knowing that there is no other. And then we've journeyed to this sacred moment. I love to create a flow for the months. And the flow for this August was our walk in the world. And it's based on a series of lectures by Mark Nepo in the Book of Soul. And initially, when we started this series off, I explored living life with meaning, living life with truth, and living life with kindness. And you know, the beautiful thing is when you take a salient idea and you let it start to grow, it's like having a garden. And in a way, our consciousness is a garden. So what seeds are you planting in the soil of your consciousness? Are you planting seeds of possibility and hope as you launch into a new motherhood with your son? Are you planting seeds of diversity and change as you say, I'm going to approach life in a proactive instead of a reactive way? You know, my Zen calendar yesterday was Byron Katie, and she said, everything, without exception, everything in life is here for us. Nothing happens to us. And so she says, when life gives you those challenges, those opportunities, she says, could we bless them and receive the gift of those challenges? And then instead of saying, this is a problem that I've got to fix and get rid of, we say, this is an opportunity for me to listen more deeply and to get creative in how I respond to what is. I noticed in the paper that they had this article about a thing called the army worm, and they had a photograph of it, and Trace said, you need to read this. And it was about these worms that are supposedly destroying some lawns, and you can see this devastation of the lawns. And their solution was to use all these different poisons on the worm. And I found myself reacting from within because I said, the birds eat the worms, and then the birds could die. And I said, is this always the solution? Poison, what you can't appreciate? And so I saw myself having a reaction to an article because in a strange sort of way, Ernest Holmes says, show me an individual who is for something and against nothing, and I'll show you an individual who can change the world. Now, last week, I shared with you the story of my beloved husband who's fighting for the rights of trees. And in Five Points, it's a historical neighborhood. And if you even want to put a grow box and alter that or change your siding on your house or the windows, you have to go through some kind of historical society and get permission. But if you as a homeowner want to cut the 200-year-old tree down in your yard, have at it. So my little husband, he's calling the city, and he called the thing, and I said, honey, I see how this is disturbing you, because you're fighting a war with people who are cutting trees down. And he called even our representative, and she said, we don't have a right to go on people's property and tell them what to do. And so, but there is a thing out by the street that the city has, I don't know what they call that, the street area between the sidewalk and the street, which is the city's property, and they just removed some huge trees in Five Points. So he called the city arborist, and he says, I would like to pay for the replacement of those trees. Oh. Well, once he said he was going to pay for it, the phone got, and all of a sudden now, you're going, and he's going to do it because his sister Susan died. She died of cancer of the jaw, and she left him a chunk of change. So these are going to be in honor. Trees for Susan. She loved trees. So now there is a fund in the name of Susan that are going to be planting the trees. So he's so happy because he's for something and it gives meaning to his life. And the truth is you can't fight City Hall because people are going to do what people do, but you can err on the side of kindness. So each one of us gets to find a way to navigate in a world that seems kind of crazy. You know, we've got a hurricane going on. We've got a leaving of people in Afghanistan. And you know, it flashed on for me many, many years ago when we left Vietnam, and how that wasn't a pretty picture either. And Gigi was a refugee. She knows what it's like. Just being a refugee, there's going to be chaos. So what if we could embrace that chaos is a part of change? If you've ever been through a divorce, there's a bit of chaos there. But change on the other end is what it's all about. So my beloved Raul and I love this man named Richard Rohr. And Richard Rohr has a new book out. It's all called Patterns on the Energy. And there's one pattern that repeats itself endlessly throughout every tradition. Bill will appreciate that because he's a scientist. The pattern is thesis, antithesis, and then synthesis. The pattern is order, disorder, reorder. The pattern is birth, death, resurrection. And so whatever starts has to kind of deconstruct. I think our organization, CSL, is going through a little deconstruction so that it can reconstruct by putting the head and the heart together. It's a natural thing. We teach involution and evolution. I think our country went from order to disorder to a reordering. So what if this is the pattern that each one of us gets to embrace in our own unique way? What in your life needs to deconstruct? What needs to die? You have to fully die before you can give birth. If you've ever been in a relationship and you don't end that relationship fully, it's like you want to get to second base, but you're still clinging to first. You can't get to second base if you're still clinging to first. So something has to die in order for something new to emerge. Now, could we be ruthlessly honest with ourselves what that would look like? My Zen calendar this week had a little quote from Ralph Waldo Emerson that made me laugh. And usually Emerson doesn't make me laugh, but I kept reading it over and over again. And this is what he said. Remember, Emerson was the guy that said, be and not seen. It's all about who you are. And this is what he said. Be silly. Emerson saying, be silly. Be silly, be honest, and be kind. And I found myself laughing. Why should we be silly? Because when we're silly, we don't take ourselves so seriously. Someone said in our revealing service last week that for her, the big idea was to be like a child if he would enter the kingdom of heaven. Children take things lightly. They can forgive on a whim. They don't hold grudges and resentments. So could we be silly? Could we be fun? Could we be playful? And when someone wants to rub our feet, could we say, oh, here, go ahead. It may sound silly, but what if we are here to give and receive in joint manner? You know, you cannot give if you don't know how to receive. First of all, we're all receiving from the universe, aren't we? And then we give back that which we've received. So if we've received love, and there's only one spiritual rule in the Inca tradition, it's called sacred reciprocity. If you have been blessed in this lifetime, then it's your responsibility to give back some of that blessing to the world. Wow. And then it's a reciprocal thing. And then as you give, you receive. You see this cyclical thing. This is how the circulation of the universe operates. So the first week was be meaningful, which means get into the soul energy, be truthful, find a truth that resonates with you, and then be kind. Let your religion be kindness. The second week, I talked about being wholehearted. And this is a huge idea. Being wholehearted doesn't say we have to be perfect versus flawed. Being wholehearted says my perfect embraces my own imperfect. So by being a wholehearted person means you can have your shadow. You can have your fears, you can have your confusion, you can have your anxiety, and it coexists simultaneously with your clarity and with your peace. So then you're not in an act of violence against yourself. So when sadness comes up, there you are, my little sadness, and bring it in. When you're confused, my beloved Jean Anne is a little sad and confused because she has this big heart that cares and she has a little mouse that's trapped. I, like you, Jean Anne, I was working in the garden, and one day there was a little mouse sitting on the chair. And he was compromised. I think one of his eyes was diseased, and he was so cute. He was wiggling his little nose. How could you not love that little mouse? He was calling to me. And Trey said, it's a mouse, David, it's a mouse. I said, but it's such a cute little mouse. I saw Ratatouille. You know, sometimes little mice are Disney characters, you know. And I also saw Cinderella. She was befriended by the mice. Now call me crazy. It's all God's children. So when you get playful, when you get silly with the universe, then you find yourselves doing wonderfully strange things, like rescuing a plant that's been thrown out by the side of the road, and you plant it and you save it. And it makes life meaningful. So being wholehearted was what I looked at the second week. And could you take this personally to yourself? It has to start with you. Can you be wholehearted with yourself? So when your shadow starts come up, when your issues start coming up, could you love that part of you and not make that part of you wrong? We all have those parts of us that are insecure. And that's the whole thing. This is out of Carl Jung. If you don't embrace the shadow will then get repressed and distorted, will operate subversively, usually by projecting the shadow out onto the world. And you can tell if you're not wholehearted, because usually you're blaming others for your own problem. So being wholehearted means you can embrace every part of life. Remember Byron Katie, everything is here for us, even the stuff that's uncomfortable. The third week I looked at what is ours to bring forth? We've been given this amazing thing called the life, this one life that we've been given. And by listening to the soul that wants meaning, it will share what does it want to bring forth in the world. My little soul wanted to be a dancer, but it wasn't to be a dancer like a Baryshnikov on the stage. It was to be a dancer that would liberate the soul through movement. But first I had to liberate my soul through movement. Judy is a dancer. She knows what I mean. And so then I started taking classes where you would dance the rhythms of the soul. And I found that by dancing the rhythm of the feminine, it was fluidic. The rhythm of the masculine was anger. You see how they put men in this angular thing? The movement of chaos. You know, it was very hard for me to dance chaos. Because if you don't live a life in chaos, I like order in my life. To dance chaos was very difficult. Then there was another rhythm of the soul, was the lyricism of the child that would skip and play. That lyrical part was easy. And then the most profound dance of the soul was the dance of stillness, the dance of silence. You know, what if we knew that our greatest asset, and in the class we're teaching on Wednesday, he talks about peace and quiet as the gift of meditation. That's why meditation is such a profound practice. But meditation isn't just something you do as a discipline. Meditation is the way that you live your life. To be consciously breathing, to be still. When you work on someone's hair, that's meditation. When my husband weeds the garden, he sits out there with this angelic smile because his mind is quiet for a period of time, and he's just weeding his garden. And then he sees the results of his labor, and he feels good about himself. Now, that's a form of meditation. So, what is yours to bring forth? Anastasia loves Jesus, so here's Jesus in the Gospel of Thomas. If you bring forth that which is within you, Jesus said, that which is within you will save you. That's your soul's wisdom. If you do not bring forth that which is within you, says Jesus, that which is within you will destroy you. So isn't it time to start deciding, what is it that my soul came here to be? And then your doingness comes from that beingness. You know, and then last week, it was kind of fun, I explored the idea of standing on and standing for. And Mark Nepo asks this existential question, what do you stand on? Because that determines what you stand for. And so the greatest idea that you can stand on is that everything is God in expression. Could I stand on the authority of the universe, of divine love? And if divine love is that which I stand on, well, then what I stand for are loving actions, loving expressions, you know, compassion unfolding, embracing the moment. If you have a crying child, you embrace that crying child with that loving presence, and then that crying child knows that it is held and loved, and the sadness, the confusion, whatever, the anxiety fall away. And so you witness the power. And so the invitation for all of us is to take into your own experience, not as a mental exercise, but as a heart-opening exercise, what am I standing for? Am I standing for generosity? And then I give all these wonderful things to a friend, but then when the friend wants to give back to me, can I receive instead of just give? Because it's a reciprocal thing. Everything is reciprocal. They exist simultaneously. So could I stand for being the best human being I can? And then the divinity and the humanity work together in harmony and creates a whole new template for how we live in the world. So this week, to finish this series, I asked that final question, so what is our walk in the world? Now, when I studied with Thich Nhat Hanh, he said the miracle isn't to walk on water as they reputed Jesus to have done. He said the miracle isn't to walk on fire. So many people are doing the fire walk and their feet don't get burned. He says the miracle, the true miracle, is to walk on this planet where every step is an acknowledgement that right where I stand is holy ground. To consciously walk and see everything as sacred. Wow. Then we're not at war with nature. We don't have to create this adversarial relationship with the mother planet. It's time for us to awaken as a species. Last week, I closed my talk with a little excerpt from Spiritual Ecology by Llewellyn Van Lee, and he says, it is imperative now that we see the sacredness of our planet and that we see it as a spiritual being. He said the soul of the planet, he calls it the anima mundi. The anima mundi, the soul of this planet, needs to be tended just like you tend your own personal soul. Now that's a much greater order of being, isn't it? I was sharing with the class this morning in that pattern, those three patterns. The one that really moved me was a visual image, and it just said story, story of life. Then the second tier, a smaller circle, said our story. And I thought, the story of humanity, the story of Christianity, the story of Western civilization, our story. But then the little dot right in the center was my story. The one that exists least of all is my story. That's the impermanent one. But the story is where we need to all aspire to get into. What is the story of the universe that's revealing itself? And could that determine what our walk in the world is? So Mark Nepo, in this lovely little section, he talks about the difference between urgency and a natural flow. He said, my walk for so much of my life was urgent. I have to get things done. That needs to be fixed, you know? And I realized I live with a husband who's very urgent. Things need to be done. They need to be done today as fast as possible. And so I'm reading this yesterday in the back patio, and I wanted to go in and tell him, honey, it's because everything is so urgent that you suffer. And as I walk in, he's decided to clean out all the cupboards. And everything is on the floor. He's going through a major renovation and clarity, and there's an urgency. I said, those cupboards have been sitting there for years. All of a sudden, there's this urgency to clean out the dog things and the things and the bat. And so let me give you a little taste, because you can't escape urgency. Oh, and this is my favorite of all Zen quotes. If you learn to use a perfect afternoon in a perfectly useless manner, you have learned the meaning of life. If you can learn to use the perfect afternoon in a perfectly useless manner, that would be kind of just to have fun with your own life. You have learned the meaning of life. So here's what he says about this walk in the world. He said, we're all on this ride, this being human. And part of this ride of being human is the expansion into that field of oneness and then the contraction of being human. They go together. And this is part of our walk in the world. The contraction, the growth experiences, the expansion, the embracing experiences. So he builds on that idea. Still, each time we're loved or we're broken open, what we keep tucked away merges with the ever-evolving world. So when this stuff, when these contractions happening, it's helping us. It's not my suffering, it's the suffering of the world, Terry Girl. He says, making our heart expand till we are closer to everything. That's the ultimate goal. After such moments, we're more integrated and we're less capable of tucking things away as the inner world versus the outer world. What we are really, just one world, and that one world is alchemizing itself within us. Wow. It's alchemizing itself in us. So then we can face the darkness, the shadow, what we call evil, and say evil is just live spelled backwards. And evil is a judgment call. You know, I'm sure so many people would call us evil here because we're not traditional religion. You know, we're seeking to expand into a higher order of being. So he says this, it seems that the storms are meant to break out our habits, to break through that conditioned behavior. The storms are here to break out our habits. Anybody have a stormy relationship that broke everything up? Am I the only one? Oh, Michael, you had one too. Good. It seems that these storms are here to break up our old habits until we're forced open by experience and then we're soothed by love. We have no choice to become students of what it means to be alive. We have no choice but to become students of what it means to be alive. When I became a brand new minister, in the little code of things, Sylvie, the very first thing it says, a minister is first and foremost a student of truth. And I would add to that, a student of life. So could we be teachable? After 33 years of ministry, I realized that I have got to continually court the beginner's mind and the beginner's heart. I have to let go of the idea that I have any answers. And then I'm teachable and I'm receptive. You know, that's the place to be. That's why we're all here, to continue to grow and evolve and become more of what we are. So he said, I've learned that when I am urgent, I constrict myself and life crashes up against me. While much is important, very little is urgent, he said. And understanding this is a threshold for peace. Stripped of our urgency, then being alive is its own reward. I don't have to force everything to happen to get everything done. I don't have to get my book done tomorrow. You can write that book until the day you die, and you probably will. There's no urgency. Wow. Then you could go through that perfectly alive day with nothing really important. We're here this Sunday morning. There's rain that's going to be coming up in a couple of days. You have a little girl that needs some love. I've got a garden that needs some tending. Yeah, and it'll get done when it gets done. I'm going to have a haircut on Thursday, finally. Look how long it's getting. I've learned that when urgent, we constrict and then life crashes up against us. And when exhausted or loved into a sense of surrender, well, then we expand and life flows through us. Could we surrender and let life flow through us? Things get done when they get done. Being human, we will always become urgent. And when we do, we will constrict. And then in time, ultimately, we will surrender and expand. This is a choice. No one can escape this, but it helps to know that being urgent is like having a cramp in your heart and a cramp in your mind. And that cramp ultimately will pass. Huh. If you just trust. The last thing, when touched by that common well of spirit, we're able to enter then into a stillness that lets us feel the foundation of existence under all of our troubles. Is it that simple? Just to find the foundation of existence that's at the core of your being, that peace that we encountered with the sound of the bell? Over the years, he said, I've learned that the inner life is not a refuge in which we hide from experience, but the inner life is a practice ground from which to gather strength and clarity as we enter into the world. It's very practical spirituality. Ernest Holmes was a practical man from New England. And he says, what is it if I know this peace and I can't apply it to life? So what if we get to carry that peace into the workplace, into our relationships with our partners, with our body, with our mind? And so when the mind's going crazy and the body's giving us symptoms and we get vertigo, we're gentle and we listen to the body. My husband's having little vertigo things and he gets unstable. Sometimes he falls. And so we're just being present with that. The task of coming alive and staying alive is beautiful, and it is endless. You never get to the finish line. And every day, we're asked to move at a pace of what is real and to take the risk to be wholehearted in everything we do, every day. Now that means for me is when this shadow stuff comes up, we don't treat it away. We say, there you are, my little sadness. I'm feeling lonely today. There you are, my little anger issues. I've got some righteous anger at cutting down the trees. You know, Pam Hurdy, she's my neighbor, and she said she wept when they cut this huge oak that was two houses down from her. And she said, when my daughter has to get a permit to put a raised bed in her yard, but yet they can go in and cut a 200-year-old tree, you know, she had her little righteous anger. And I said, it's okay to feel that anger, Pam, you know? So, but to do it in a wholehearted way and to have the courage to stay soft, to stay strong, and to stay kind. I love those little three things. It comes in threes. To be soft, you might say silly, to be strong in the midst of your vulnerability, and then be kind. And then lastly, he said, these vows of authenticity will allow us to thrive in the world. And in moments of thriving, where everything is here for you, we repair each other, and ultimately, we illuminate the world. Everything is here for me. Your mom's got COVID. It's an opportunity to be mindful and to love and to take the next step in a proactive way. It's not a bad thing. A young lady shared with me earlier that she had a stroke when she was in her 20s. And she said it changed her life. And I shared with her, that's not because you did something wrong. I had a heart attack at 69. It did an amazing thing to help me heal at a deeper level. Was it a bad thing? It was a thing. It changed my life. So what if life will give you things? Someone called them ABGOs, another bloody growth opportunity. But I say another blessed growth opportunity because it changes the way I respond to it. And then I can say that this is here for me. We're teaching this wonderful class, Falling into Grace with Ajahshanti, and he talks about the return to the sanity, the return to being divinely human and humanly divine, the return to being fully present with what is. He said all suffering is because we don't like what is, and we're at war with life. But when we accept what is, we have a pandemic, we have a hurricane, we have a war that's ending, we have a lot of political upheaval, we have a lot of stuff going on. Could we not be at war with that? Could we return home to that peaceful place, just like Mark Nepo said, and offer that to the world? Offer our softness, our strength, and our kindness to the world. Offer our silliness and our honesty and our kindness. Again, that word kindness seems to be used an awful lot, doesn't it? To just be kind to one another. And it has to start by being kind with ourselves. So the question then is, what is your walk in the world? You know, the world is all around us. Are we walking in it in a mindful way? Let me give you a tiny bit of Ajahshanti. Oh, by the way, we're starting our first satsang this Wednesday night. It's going to be a generational healing. If you want to be an invite, we're going to do it on Zoom. There's a sign-up sheet, and we'll send you out an invitation. Or you can just call or text Glory G, and she'll put you on the list. She's making it. And we'll be doing our satsangs in virtual world while we're still coping with this pandemic. And it's a very healing thing. So here's Ajah talking about this return. He calls it the great return. And he says, everything you see is a manifestation of spirit, everything. And he says, and when you know that, you're courting heaven on earth. It was Ernest Holmes that said, keep your conversation in heaven. Heaven is a state of consciousness. It was Thomas Merton that said, there is a hidden wholeness within all of us. That would be the kingdom of heaven, that Jesus said, seek it first and everything is added unto you. It's a state of beingness. So could we find that spiritual essence and return to that with every breath, every day? When you wake up in the morning, Anastasia, go home to heaven. Then you can pick out the Bible, but first go home. And when you stay in that place, it has a way of revealing, unveiling a revelation that is organic and true through you. So he said, everything you see is a manifestation of spirit. Everything is God incarnate. Everything is God. There ain't no spot where God is not. Boy, that changes everything, doesn't it? It's all God. It's all good. It's all here for you, every bit. Even the darkness, even the stuff that's uncomfortable. So here's Ajah going on to say, he says, allow our spiritual essence to come through. Doesn't mean that you must ignore your body, your mind, your personality, but we can see that our bodies and our minds and our personalities are also expressions of spirit. So then your body dances as spirit dances, and your mind thinks, and the genius comes out when the wisdom is, the mind is used. He says, the love that your ego is looking for can only be found in your own essence. Essence is the expression of God through all of us. What is God but a simple essence? The cost of which is nothing less than everything. So could you know yourself as essence? You know, and he says, nobody and no thing can give you enough of this from the outside. It's an inside job. You got to find it there. That's what Dorothy learned at the end of The Wizard of Oz. Never look any further than your own backyard, right here. So he goes on to say, your inner spiritual presence is an absolute lover of what is. It's a lover of all of what is. This presence doesn't prefer some things are good and some things are awful. This inner presence is the lover of everything. Wow. Then you say we're having a storm. Is it a bad storm? It's a storm. It's going to provide rain. We can be safe in the storm. We have a little storm shelter in our basement. So he says, in the end, there is nothing to be gained or lost in this life. The only possible loss is in closing your eyes to what is. This too is good, this too is God, and I demand to see the blessing. This too is good, this too is God. You know, I think of Anastasia. She's got that Kyoto dragon lizard creature named Lizzie, and she loves crickets, and the crickets have decided to take up residence in my basement, and they have their sweet little cricket sound, and I think these could be food for her little dragon, or they could be a symphony for my ears, and I think I'm going to keep them as a symphony for my ears, and she can find another food source for her thing. It's hard to think of your crickets as a food source. He says, look within right now, in this very present instant, and allow yourself to experience the inner presence. Simple. Right now. Look within. Find the presence. It's there. Look within. Find the presence. It's there. Huh. It's stillness itself, isn't it? I pulled out Ernest Holmes because I know Barbara loves her 365. And Ernest Holmes courts the presence. He's the founder of this teaching. And some of the stuff I don't agree with him, because he tends to regard things as mental equivalents. This is the equivalent of this. And if you change your thinking, you change your life. It's so much bigger than thought. But at the core, he goes right to the essence of what it's all about, which is about this presence. That what we are is this presence. And you have to be so humble to know that you are God in expression. And so he did a beautiful treatment about this presence. I'm going to use this for our closing meditation. And I'll let you know, Chris, when we do the bell, okay? He says, this divine presence is within each of us. It's both the center and the circumference of our being. He said, it's this infinite presence that inhabits eternity and yet finds a dwelling place within our own consciousness. Boy, that's a pretty big picture, isn't it? It dwells in eternity and yet moves through your consciousness. He says, we recognize it, with a capital I, as the only authority that there is. You go right to source. You stand on source. He says, we know that we are one with it and we are one in it. We're not separate. He said, for there is no separation from it, and our consciousness is the very depth and the height of its being and is one with all that it is. We are one with this presence. All we are is this presence. Wow. It's pretty humbling, isn't it? He says, there is an infinite self-knowingness, not a thought pattern, which we will call spirit, and it is ruled by law and is impelled by love. They say in the science of man, all is love and all is law. Let love lead the way and the law will make the way possible. So we're dealing with spiritual law. It's done unto you as you believe. So we get to be conscious of what's operating this field of awareness, but yet it's impelled by love. Now you get to find out what that love is. That love is something huge. It's divine love. And he said, each of us is an individual center within it and without being an individual separate from it. It's like we're all drops in the ocean of love. We're not separate from the ocean. We are the ocean. So we are rooted in this oneness, which produces limitless variety. And therefore, God is uniquely individualized, uniquely personal to each one of us. And it comes through the fire of our own aliveness. Now that's something you can feel into. This is God's life. It's flowing through every breath. It's the knower behind the thinker. It's the lover behind the one who gets attached. It's the peace behind the chaos. It's the spaciousness within the contraction. So Ernest Holmes, he concludes this by saying, let us keep our thoughts turned to this divine presence within us. He says, we are not one in God. We are not one with God, but we are one of God. Wow. Deeply desiring that we become more aware of the love that we have for one another and the love that we have for our world, may our consciousness be opened to a deeper understanding of life as we reveal the light of life, the light of God that we are. We are revealers of that light. We are revealers of that love. It's the one light, the one love that is endlessly revealing itself through us right now. Allow the bell of mindfulness to take you into that space of pure awareness, of emptiness, of divine love. And just as the sound of the bell begins to move into stillness, the thought patterns in mind can just dissolve. When the mind isn't the object of our attention, then our attention can rest as stillness. I hear this admonition that says, be still and know that I am God. So our job is to be still and to invite this knowing that all there is this presence, this simple essence. We're calling it God. Some call it good. You can call it life. I think in Star Wars they called it the Force. May the Force be with you. It doesn't matter what you call it. But what does matter is that we return to that spacious place of our true nature and learn to live from that. I have a simple prayer that says, beloved, this life belongs to you. Do with it as you will. And in that, I am offering myself as an instrument for this divine essence, this divine love, this divine peace, to express, to reveal, to celebrate, and to embrace, oftentimes, the suffering of the world. We're not here to fix the suffering of the world, but we are here to embrace it. And to see it with fresh eyes, with a fresh view, that this isn't a bad thing, this is a change. And in order to change, we have to grow. In order to grow, sometimes there is some discomfort. But we are open to that. So we listen to the sound of the cricket outside. And we realize that nature is always loving us, supporting us, showing us the mystery of belonging. If we could but listen, listen deeply. Meister Eckhart said, he who can see God in the smallest of things is better than seeing an angel. And so I invite you to see a humble butterfly, perhaps, and marvel at the beauty of such a winged thing who's here for such a short time. Jean Ann was marveling in our class on Wednesday how, in order for the butterfly to emerge from the cocoon, it has to struggle to eat its way out. And the grace in that is we too get to struggle in order to free our soul. We struggle with our conditioning, with our programming, with our belief systems, with our resistance, our control issues, until we don't struggle anymore. And we find ourselves fully revealed as this true nature that has come to awaken here on planet Earth, to be revealed as the very expression of the One. And we rest, not thinking too much what that's going to look like, because we cannot know any more than that little butterfly could know what she's going to look like when she eats her way out of the cocoon. But we can surrender to this sacred moment as the bell of mindfulness has taken us home. How effortless it is to rest in this place. The urgency of doing seems to fall away. And we are absorbed by that stillness. we are held in the arms of grace, forever safe in the arms of love. The most valuable thing we have is our attention. Could we be willing to spend that valuable commodity called our attention on being still, on that quiet, on that ease, on that sweetness of the breath? You know, with the COVID all around us, people are having a hard time breathing. And so could we not take this breath that we have so copiously experienced in every moment, not take it for granted, but find out how sacred it is, and take a conscious inhalation and feel the grace of that breath as it moves in. And then as you exhale consciously, let go of whatever it is that needs to be released. Could be a pattern of thought, could be a narrative of some kind of judgment that you've been carrying around. And just through a simple exhalation, set yourself free, even for a holy instant. One glimpse of the divine is worth everything. And so we get glimpses. And we feel. This is the moment the Lord has made. Rejoice and be glad in it. It doesn't get any better than this simple moment with the birds singing outside and stillness radiating in our hearts, clarity in our minds. The confusion seems to have fallen away. The anxiety is no longer operating in full force. It's taken a break, and we have come home to the other shore. And now as we prepare to enter into our walk in the world, we get to observe who is going to take the first step. It says in Sufism, if you take one step toward God, God comes running toward you. And so could our step be toward the heavenly presence that is everywhere revealing herself? And as we acknowledge it, as we bow to the holy instant, we are bowing to the self within the self. There is only one life. That life is God's life, and that life is perfect. And we are witnessing it within, and we are seeing it everywhere reflected in the world. Let's claim the blessing of this anointing of truth by placing our hands over our hearts and joining in the heart salutation, saying to this presence that's within and all around, I honor you.
I honor you.
I respect you.
I love you.
You are the dynamic expression of God in the world. The God presence in me bows to the God presence in you. There is only one life. And we witness you. We celebrate you. We honor you. And with joy and playfulness, we open our eyes now. We open our hands. We are beings of light. We let our light shine in the world so that it might spread out. Is it that simple? It's that simple. Thank you for sending in your tithes. Satsang on Wednesday night. If you're interested, sign the sheet out there. And we will see you next Sunday.
For listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.